Accession number 2008, reel 4.
Dennis Wire out, reel 4.
Well, we used to go out on the schemes. I mean, we opened up an area north of Morpeth in Newcastle during the war. That'll be about 42, I suppose. They wanted various areas of it the going, you know, for tanks. Difficult going, and you know, like Thetford and all that round there was boys stuff, wasn't it? A bit sandy and all that. So they went up to north Morpeth, just north of Morpeth, in a place called Longhorsley, and opened up a big new training area there on the moors. And it was more difficult country, you know. Because in tank driving and tank, you've got to know the country you're in, I think. I think the majority of good commanders and tank commanders were blokes that worked on the land, you know. I won't say it in, you know, in close country, like in where it's all built up, but I should say, the going, instinct, a countryman knows the instinct of the land in front of him. Whereas somebody who brought up in a town would never know where the boggy land is. And I mean, we used to have tanks almost disappear up to the turrets in these bogs up there. And that we used to pull them out with... Well, I didn't used to pull them out. The Remy blokes used to pull them out with these old scammels, you know, with a three-in-one pull. Kind of anchored to a tree or another tank or two tanks and that. And that'd be about half a day pulling that out, you know, gradually pulling out. You couldn't hardly see the thing moving, but they used to get them out. I mean, you get a tank in up to its turret, and it's something of a bog. Yeah.
How did you live on the schemes? Were you self-contained?
We used to have rations, you know, hard tank rations. We used to brew up, the tankman's brew was a famous brew, wasn't it? You filled they used to have some small hard tank biscuit tins with lids. We used to fill them up about halfway with sand. And of course, when we stopped, we used to pour some petrol in, light it, and put the Dixie on top. Of course, if you got caught halfway, you used to get hold of your berry inside and get hold of the hand of the Dixie, lob it off, and slap the lid on that thing, we had to put the fire out and pick it up and put it on the tank and away, you know. 5 minute brews. Every time you stop, you used to brew up. And that's how we used to brew up. We had little petrol stoves, you know, but it'd take you a month to boil anything up on them. We used to cook up in the Dixies, and it used to be... we used to have a steak and kidney pudding in a tin and all that was heat up, you know, in these man pack rations. Plum puddings, there used to be some. You used to get woolly beef mostly. Steak and kidney pudding, stewed steaks. Can't think of the rest of it. You used to heat it up in the tin, you know.
What type of sleeping accommodation did you have? What type of sleeping accommodation?
Well, we used to sleep next to the tanks, yeah. Always sleep next to the tank. You used to have a kind of a tarpaulin made like that with flaps on what you covered the tank up with. And that used to double as a bivouac. And we all the crew used to sleep. What I used to like about it was when you was in the tank crew, it don't matter who the officer was, in charge. I was mostly in second in command tank, the squadron. They had to do the guards the same as all the crew. That was all depends how, what percentage of stand, you know, the guard, where you was nearer the enemy, they used to up at say 50% of the tank stand still if you was likely to be attacked. But the officers all had to do the guard duties the same as the men. And I used to love waking them up at about 2 o'clock in the morning when I'd finish mine, and they could go out and in the cold, you know, and do it. And they hated it. You know, they thought they were, well, I suppose they were privileged, but that was a bit beneath them doing that. I had some good officers in my time.
Can you remember any of them?
I remember the one in the 5th and 4th, second in command of C Squadron, Captain Rennie. The last I heard of him, he worked up in the city somewhere. He was in the Inns of Court, the territorial unit. That was after the war, and I never heard the more after him. We used to exchange Christmas cards, and then all of a sudden it dropped, and I thought he must have died. I think he got the MC, by the way. He was a gentleman. He worked at some government office in London. I don't remember. We're going back 50 years nearly, haven't we?
And what kind of uniform did you wear when you were out on schemes?
Oh, we used to use in this country, we used to have a tank suit, overalls, tank overalls. Yours, we used to wear them.
What colour were they?
Well, they were kind of grey, khaki, more like your shirt, only a bit sort of whitey, you know, but they were lighter, I think.
And greeny, kind of light green.
Yeah, lighter and flecked, more or less, yeah. Yeah, so they had their tank overalls were better than the tank suits they issued us with. Were a kind of when we went over to Europe, the tank suits were what they issued with them zipped up things, you know, and the slightest snag in the turret around they had to rip them. You couldn't do nothing about it.
And what kind of headwear did you wear?
Berry, all the while, yeah, berry.
No protective headwear?
I still got my berries. we were the first units of the army to have berries, the tank corps and the tanks. The others never had, when I was in the engineers, we had forage caps and cheese cutters. Yeah, the old Barry, that was favourite. I think that's his best. Well, as you can see now, everybody wears them because they're the most appropriate headwear if you're in any kind of country. I mean, we used to have special steel helmets, but we never used to wear them. The tank that was beneath us, we used to wash in them. We used to take the liners out and wash in them. that was beneath us to wear a steel helmet. It's fairly freely, but we always wore our berry.
And the makeup of the regiment by this stage, was there a lot of drafts who weren't? Because originally it had been a yeomanry regiment from Scotland, hadn't
it? Yeah, well, you see, when I first went there and all the blokes come back from Dunkirk, there was a sprinkling of regular soldiers like Ted and that, what joined them in 1939, and all the rest come from 5th and 4th, you know, they come from pits and most of them, quite a few miners and that there, well, of course, getting on into the war, I think, it was at Wellingborough when They said all the miners had got to go home, and then the blokes didn't want to. They wanted to stay in the Five and Fourth, but they posted them back at their home. They had to go back in the pits.
What were the relationships like between the English members and the Scottish?
Oh, yeah, but fantastic blokes. There's only Englishmen and Scotsmen you can go into the battle with and rely on them. Believe me, I've been in with Canadians, Poles, we let them in, and you can't rely on them. I mean, you start off on the start line to go and attack a position to lead them in, and you'll find out you'd let them in, and you'll be in there an hour, and somebody else go back and fetch them, and all that business. The Canadians weren't too bad, but you see, the Poles were part of the Canadian army. We was with the Canadians over down the side a lot of the time. C Squadron with 30 Corps, you know, and the Poles were part of the Canadian army. We took the coast road up Holland and all that, all Belgium and Holland.
But in the UK, you'd been in the 9th Armoured Division.
9th Armoured Division.
And that was broken up in the middle of the war.
That was broken up when they took Horrocks and Lumsden out to the Middle East, because when they took them out, they asked for volunteers, and a hell of a lot of people volunteered. But I remember I'd just got married, or was just going to get married, and I thought, well, I'm not going to volunteer for this lot. Of course, they had each man up and asked him to volunteer. He wanted to take most of his blokes out there with him. I think he'd worked with the division so long, all his staff went out there. So what the brigade major and all his staff, they went out there with Lumsden, and Horrocks took all his staff out from the division commander.
Did you ever meet Horrocks?
Yes, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was walking Midford Hall up. I was walking into Morpeth one night and with a chap, and we was going in for a night out in Morpeth, because there was nothing up there. It was a good, about 4 or 5 miles we got a wall in, and thinking of it. So we was walking down this road, and we was walking, and his staff car come past us, because there was no curb here, and he knew we'd seen it before we got there. But I didn't know it was. I thought, Christ, bloody staff car with the flag up, you know, they had all the stars, flags, and he flew his pendant on, and he passed us and pulled up. And his door opened up, and that said, hurry up if you want the lift. I thought, well, it must be some blokes out, you know, but then my mate went and got in the front, and I had to get in the back, and who should I sit next to? It was Brian Horrocks. And oh God, I was quivering. Well, I was quivering in my shoes, really. But we only got about 4 miles to go, and that time he got in the conversation. He'd quizzed me as to what was happening at brigade headquarters, and what was the billets like, and what was the food like, and he'd asked everything like that. And he dropped us off in Morpeth, and I thanked him very much, and he said, only too welcome, he said. He was, never meet another bloke like that, I don't think, not another commander. And I think anybody what's met him, I don't know if you've met other people who had anything to do with him. Must say he's the same, because he used to come round on schemes and offer you a fag, I mean, and talk to you, and ask how things were going. I mean, that meant a lot to blokes. I mean, Montgomery wouldn't do that.
Did you meet Lumsden?
Lumsden, yeah, well, I was in Brigade Quarters, yes, I was in Lumsden, yeah. I never really got involved with him because I was in the Brigade Major's tank. He had a tank of his own, and I never really went out on schemes when I was at Brigade, not with the tanks. I used to drive the dingoes out with the umpires in from. But I never went in as a, I don't think we ever done a brigade scheme up in Northumberland because that would be horrendous really. But if we'd have come down here and I'd have been in a brigade, because one time we was at Alverton Hall in Suffolk. That was Lord Ivor's place, that's. And we was in the stables, and that's the best barracks I was in the army. That's the best billets ever I had in stables.
Why was that?
Well, we was mostly in nesting huts, in two-tier bed. I mean, if you give the conditions what we lived in the prisons today, there'd be an uproar. I mean... The condensation used to run off all these old missing huts, you know, these old corrugated things. You'd get about, oh, I don't know how many of them, 20 some odd blokes in a hut, you know, two-tier beds. One little old stove in there, you know, torch stove in the front. If you wanted to get warm, you had to just lean over and drop a round in the top of it. So that went off and that all started. Scattering the chimney used to go up and the sparks would go out. It's a dangerous job, but no, that's how you used to get warm in the winter. Yeah, dear.
With the schemes that you've been involved in between 1941 and 1944, have they changed in any way? Were the tactics developing at all?
Oh, yes. Tactics evolved. I was only in Ignog, really. I wasn't involved in the main planning and all these things, but you could see things evolved and I suppose they got rid of all these old donkey wallop, as I called them, what were in charge of the tanks and mechanised cavalry, and that gradually throughout when Horrocks and Montgomery and all them got involved, and they got rid of a lot of them. You see, I don't know where they went, but they gradually disappeared. I mean, colonels used to come and go. And I mean, right down to majors, squadron leaders used to come and go. And then all of a sudden, they got to these squadron leaders, you know, were. These new people what come in as squadron leaders or the ones what stayed remain permanent, you know. You could see it changing. And, I mean, a major we had, Major Shepherd, who was second in command of the regiment, he was an enthusiastic bloke, another enthusiastic. He was always on training. But the blokes didn't like it a lot, but he was always got some scheme in mind to train you. Now, we in Africa, they used to go by the compass, by compass bearings. I mean, you've got to be deadly accurate with it. So part of his training was to come I think we was in the heart of the Bowling Green at Rothbury. He used to come in there about 11 o'clock at night, I suppose he'd been in the mess. He couldn't sleep or something. Come in there, he'd get the driver with the truck. He'd get all the blokes out in the back of the wagon, take us right out on bloody moor somewhere. And he'd already done all this, worked it out, all the bearings, what we got to march on, where we'd meet the truck when it's finished. And he used to pair us up with the compass and the bearing, you know, give us the distances that we could march on these bearings. And And then we've got to take a new bearer and march on that for so long. And, you know, just moaning about it at the time. But we went out there one night, and that was a lovely moonlight night, and they dropped us off. Like, and I remember we marched on three or four of these compass bearings, indeterminate, you know, length, march so-and-so, and then take a new. Boy, some stroke of luck, we finished up at the point, and we that was on a hill where we got to finish up where the track would be. And the old chap was standing on there watching these blokes on the moonlight flying off in all bloody directions. So we waited a while. He said, I don't think we'll wait for them, they'll get ourselves back. And so we just went off back to Rothbury and in our beds, and the others had to come in and round time the next day. Oh yeah, it was like that. He used to go out on schemes, in charge of a lot of schemes. Down on the South Downs, we had to go down the South Downs, Sussex, somewhere between Lewis and Seaford. Farmers, is there a place near now? I don't know. Somewhere near there. Well, we went to... He was in charge of instructing. They got worked out a certain routine on this course, and they all come down, and of course I was his operator at the time, and they had all the different squadrons come down and do this scheme. You know, it was something that worked out, and he worked it out. That is a thing with men. If you leave them without doing anything interesting, they'll rot away. Everything will go. I think it's the same with any job. If you don't maintain an interest, be it bad or good, what you've got to do, they'll deteriorate. And that's one thing they tried to do, I think, is to keep you on your toes. Yeah. Now, where did we get to now?
Where you joined the anti-aircraft.
Oh, I done the ACAC when they split up. That was when the V2s, they took them back.
So that was 1943 and 1944?
Yeah, somewhere around about that time. They took them to the coast. And they split up the division, of course. And then we moved as a 5th and 4th Yeomanry, not in any brigade or division, down to outside Bury St Edmunds.
When would this have been?
43.
The end of 43?
The end of 43, yeah, I think it would be. Beginning of 44. I don't know. Anyway, in between that time, it cut in a fine line. So we moved down there, and all the tanks we had, you know, were taken off us, and we was issued with Churchill Mark 7s.
And what was your opinion of the Churchill?
Oh, it's a good tank, but that's an infantry tank, isn't it? We was cavalry up till then, and it's the infantry tank. We was equipped with flamethrowers. We went to Woodbridge up... near Suffolk there. Sutton Hoo, you know where Sutton Hoo is. They had all that, the 79th Armoured Div, done all their conversions to all the funnies, like the flails and the crocodiles and what the devil else was there. There's various other things, the REs.
So you converted to Churchill crocodiles?
Yeah, flamethrowers, yeah. But being a second in command tank, they didn't have flamethrowers on them, the headquarters tank, so we were all Mark 6 Churchills. We had, two 19 sets in there for... We had one in touch with the squadrons, and the other one was in touch with the regimental command. And we done flamethrower. I had to go through a flamethrower course,
Can you go through that in some detail?
Well, I can give you the introduction to it. We went into this closed area, Woodbridge, because we had all had to get out of the trucks when we went from Burris Meadons to Woodbridge. We had all had to go out the trucks, and there was MPs up there in this closed area, and you all had to have your pay books not. I suppose that was a formality. We went in there, and there was an avenue of trees, if I remember rightly, and they lined us up in two ranks, about that far from that road, say, and the same distance the other side.
20 yards?
Yeah, about 20 yards, two ranks apart. Brought this thing up with the trailer on, the crocodile. Pressured up, it was. And they told us to stand still, and they fired a burst of flame right between up the ranks. That was my introduction to the crocodile. To say I nearly went to the toilet was, well, at the FDF field went right past us up that road. I mean, never having seen anything like it. Come out, of course, it shot out in a burst of I don't know how many gallons it was now, this FDF fuel, went up like a solid rod until it hit the target at the end and then splashed all over the place.